Next up, we have Dr. Travis Polk, who's the director of the Navy Trauma Center, who's going to focus on the skills part of the assessment. You've heard about the metric, you've heard about the process, you've heard about the knowledge piece, the curriculum, now the skills.
Thank you. So so what I'd like to talk about today is how we've chosen to address the skills aspect of this. I have nothing to disclose. So we began, as you've heard about, with the key aspect of what exactly is the scope of the expeditionary general surgeon, and really what we're talking about is what is that delta gap of what is different about the general surgeon and the military general surgeon. What are those key skills that make what we do in that austere expeditionary environment different? What is different on that blueprint that you saw that is different from what we learn in general surgery training? And really what it boils down to on that giant map of all of those domains and subdomains is that we need to know how to do damage control trauma surgery. We need to know how to do emergent and urgent general surgery, surgical rescue and resuscitation, and initial critical care. And then all of these expanded scope of practice, subspecialty skills that used to be part of general surgery, and that we really just as time has progressed and surgery has become more specialized, are no longer part of general surgery practice. And we no longer do rotations in all of these subspecialties. But when we're the only people in these austere environments, we're called upon to do these things. And that we have to find a way to train general surgeons in these things so that when they're the only person there, they at least have an understanding of these procedures so that they're not put in the place where their only option is to Google these things and to make an attempt, so that they've at least done these in a simulation environment so that they can make an educated decision about whether they should do these procedures in a safe fashion. And so, but there's barriers. And the reality is that many military general surgeons have limited trauma experience because they're specialists in other things. And their practice doesn't include trauma. And they may have trained in places that they just didn't do a lot of trauma. Currently, they may practice in places that have low acuity, either because they're assigned operational platforms or because the MTFs that they work in are currently not extremely high volume. When they're deployed, they may have the potential to be taking care of extremely, extremely high acuity trauma patients. But the reality is that many of the places we deploy to right now are extremely low volume. And in fact, many of our teams currently have no operative cases during a 6-month deployment. And this creates the reality of a situation where it's the perfect storm where we have to prepare our surgeons to be at the optimal readiness, but it's a very difficult situation because their practice environment isn't setting them up for success. So the other barrier to this is the fact that general surgery training has changed, and Joe talked about this a little bit, but our young general surgeons, their training has changed. And this is some work that Matt Eckert has done where we see that the reality is that vascular training during general surgery has changed, and open vascular surgery during general surgery has declined, and as well as open trauma surgery experience during general surgery has declined. And there's a wealth of articles in the literature that support this. And the reality is that the decrease in open thoracic, open vascular, and open trauma cases in surgical GME currently has a direct impact on military trauma readiness. So the question becomes, how do we ensure that our current military surgeons have the requisite skills and knowledge to be successful in the military environment? And that's really what we were tasked with. And furthermore, how do we ensure this for our future surgeons how can we provide standardized training, and how do we assess this? So what was our approach to developing this curriculum? Well, you heard a little bit about this curriculum blueprinting process, and that process involved deconstructing the clinical practice guidelines that we used in order to develop that KSA blueprint. And part of that was defining the critical skills that we need in this operational environment, both the critical general surgery related skills and then those critical skills that are those subspecialty skills that may fall within that expanded scope of practice. And then what we needed to do was we needed to survey the environment, and we needed to scan both the skills courses that existed within our system, and then within the international community, both on the military side and the civilian side, to see what folks were doing and what was available to us, and adopt best practices to take the best from the best in order to develop this curriculum. And then what we really needed to do was realize that there's no best fit, there's no single modality that can do it. You can't learn everything on a cadaver, you can't learn everything in a swine model, you can't learn everything on a single simulator. We need to choose, for each given procedure that we need to know, we need to choose the best model and then develop an integrated curriculum. And then there were certain assumptions that we needed to make, that we needed to develop rigid standardization so that every surgeon was prepared in the same way. We needed to develop a process for remediation. We needed to realize that folks were going to have skills decay, and that we needed to accept that, and we needed to be prepared to remediate people appropriately when that happened, and that we needed to have a process for refresher training, and that this whole process needed to be cost effective or it wasn't going to work. When we looked at this, we realized that the asset course, which we were already using, was the most logical backbone for this for many reasons. It was a validated course. It was ready for multimedia. It already had many of the skills which were required, and it was well liked by everyone that was involved in it. The other reality was that there was a significant opportunity for expansion of the course for supplemental curriculum that supports the military, humanitarian, and other skills. And we're calling this right now Asset Plus, for lack of a better term. So a little bit about Asset. Asset's initial validation was done by military surgeons with a fairly significant experience. The initial validation was done on self-reported comfort levels, and while not ideal, I think it's important to realize that in every procedure assessed, there was a statistically significant improvement in every single procedure involved in Asset. So this video on this slide doesn't work, but this is a little bit more rigorous validation in a study that was done with residents, and this was the same resident on both sides of the slide. And before the course, he did a brachial artery exposure, and it took 10 minutes, and the structure that was isolated was the median nerve. And after the course, the same procedure was done, and in a minute and 30 seconds, the brachial artery was appropriately isolated. So I think that's proof that the course works. So what you see here is the blueprint of the critical skills that were identified in the KSA blueprint. And what you see highlighted in green is the current Asset course, and which are included in the course. On this next slide, what you see is in green is the current Asset course. What you see added in yellow is what is the Asset Plus course, the additional Asset Plus course. And so you see With the exception of military working dogs, we've covered the map with the new expanded asset course. On the next series of slides, I'm going to show you a little bit of this expanded asset course and some of the materials from the asset revision that's currently going on in conjunction with the American College of Surgeons. And these are some cuts from the asset book revision. Here you see from the damage control neurosurgery chapter some pictures from the from that chapter. You see some pictures of folks doing a damage control craniectomy. And the important thing to realize is that what we teach in this chapter is how to do it both with power and also to how to do it when you don't have power, how to do it with a giggly saw, which is what we have to teach our military surgeons because they're not going to have the benefit of power tools in that situation. And what's also important is that we have to teach them how to make the decision to do this when you don't have CT scan, how to make that clinical decision. Here you see the chapter where we go over lateral canthotomy and cantholysis. And then here you see the OBGYN chapter where we talk about C-section, postpartum hemorrhage, and hysterectomy. And the important thing here is that's different for ACET, and something that's very different for ACET is here we're going to move beyond the cadaver model into a simulation model with a high fidelity simulator, which is something that we haven't done with ACET in the past. So here you see several videos. This is also something new for ACET. What we're exploring now is how can we add in a perfused cadaver model to improve the fidelity of select procedures, to move beyond just talking about surgical exposures to now talk about how do we isolate these low volume, high acuity procedures that our surgeons need to practice in this environment to improve their skills and get practice at during this course, and then be able to assess them. And so in this slide, you see folks doing an IVC repair, a REBOA, a cardiac repair, and then on the bottom left, vascular shunting. Now we move on to talk about how are we going to measure this. And the group in Baltimore, Dr. Shackelford, who's in back, Mark Boyer, has really spent the last few years looking at how do we measure ACET. And they've published a lot of papers and really done some fabulous work at looking at skills decay and looking at how can we measure these skills and scoring these skills and looking at which of these procedures predict success and transferability. And I think that one of the most interesting things is on this graph, the group that we see here is the practicing surgeons. And this was a study that was done that looked at surgeons, that looked at residents, practicing surgeons, and experts. And what we see is that the practicing surgeons that took ACET had the highest rate of technical errors when they were reassessed a few years after taking ACET compared to the residents when they were reassessed and the experts. And what that really highlights is the need for repeat training. And I think that looking at this data is important because when we started this process, we approached it from the standpoint of we were going to go into this from the standpoint of we were going to have several stations of skills assessment and similar to the MCQ that you heard about, and we were going to do skills assessment, and then that skills assessment was going to drive the training, and that people were going to do targeted training based on their assessment. When we sat down and talked about it, we realized that on the skills side, the training was so important, and repeating the psychomotor aspect of the skills exposure was so important. And when we talked about the asset course, even the folks that regularly are involved in the asset course, the instructors, all of us that teach asset regularly, every time we teach asset, we learn something in that course. And when we talked about that formative experience of being involved in that asset course and doing those exposures regularly, we decided was so important. And when we looked at this data, we realized that was still very important. And so we shifted gears, to be honest, and realized that we need to assess people and still give people a realistic assessment of their ability and determine that they're ready to go, but that they also need to practice those skills on a regular basis. And so I think that this work has been extremely important. And so let's talk about how we're going to assess this. Also, that group has done something very important in that they've done some incredibly important work at task deconstruction, in breaking down each of these procedures that we teach in asset into their key critical components. And so they've broken down those tasks in so that each part of those procedures can be assessed in great detail, and then plug them into a tablet-based assessment tool, objective assessment tool. And so we're going to use that same format, and we're going to pick key procedures within the asset course in order to build a formative assessment of key procedures, and then develop detailed assessment tools within the asset expanded asset course to assess folks on. In order to do this, we're going to have to reduce the instructor to student ratio and use highly trained instructors, and then develop a process for targeted retraining when necessary. The way forward from here, we need to do task deconstruction for the key asset procedures, both on the cognitive and technical level, which is going to be a process of consensus agreement. We need to establish expert criterion for each procedure, which will allow inter-rater consistency and meaningful retraining process. And then we need to decide which skills are transferable in that assessment process. And that's going to come largely in part out of that work that's been done in Baltimore, where we know that certain procedures, that the success with certain procedures like femoral dissection and axillary dissection are transferable to each other, and so that we don't need to assess every single skill in great detail. And that we need, and as we move through this process, we need to continue to assure that this skills process aligns with the CPGs and KSAs as that process continues to be a living process and further develops as we move forward. That's all I have. Thank you.